Welcome to PR After Hours, your twice weekly cocktail of business, PR, and marketing tips hosted by me, Alex Greenwood. Every week, we bring you virtual happy hours featuring business advice from entrepreneurs and leading thinkers in PR, marketing, and business. We're going to get started in just a moment, so stick with us. Margo White is a serial entrepreneur turned the number one expert in copywriting for entrepreneurs. She helps Fortune 500 companies and prospective startups draft their content strategy, find their unique feature, and work with copywriters effectively. That's something I want to talk to her about, definitely. She often says that content is like couture. If it doesn't fit perfectly, it's a disaster. That's why Margo created a special formula, Content DNA. And today, here in the virtual lounge, she's going to join us and we're going to find out how to make it work for your business. Margo, welcome to the virtual lounge here.
Hey, Alex, and I'm really excited for today's interview, much more than your listeners are, because two copywriters are going to talk to each other and share their stories. So I'm going to interview you more than you do me. So,
the listeners are cringing. They're like, oh, another opportunity for Alex to talk about himself. How nice.
You should always talk about yourself. You dropped the bombs there. So.
Nice. Okay, I before we get too deeply into content, I got to ask you though. You haven't always been doing this in your career. You were doing other things until somewhat recently, right?
Yeah, I was. I have an 11-year background in investment and finance. So, I just figured out that most of the outcome in my work was dedicated to content creation. And I was really good at this. Although I was director of the company or deputy director, I mean, in different companies. But my main direction was creating content that drives action. And I was really good at this, whether it was like B2B or B2C. So I figured, you know what, do something that makes you happy. And that's how I went into this.
Well, you know, I've done some work as a PR consultant to a lot of people in the financial services sector, and it's a very, in my opinion, it's a very constrained environment. You have regulation, and it's a very conservative kind of button down type of profession. Maybe that had something to do with your decision. Were you a little tired of being kind of, you know, so confined by what you could and could not do as far as content?
Well, actually not, because a lot of my work up till now is connected to creating content for financial companies, insurance brokers, and et cetera, et cetera. I'm not gone too far from that. However, you're very correct in the sentence that there's a lot of things on financial copywriters' plate, like regulation, like talking to people. And one of the things that I noticed and mentioned is you cannot just put any content out there, because every word you're saying is stored and can be interpreted in different, you know, directions. And it's not like you can send a free email for free and you're sending it when you're a financial company. No, you're taking care of every word. And that became basically my, probably my direction for the entire business, which is old school copywriting, where every word makes sense. And I think that this approach should be adopted by all the companies out there in 2021.
I like that. Yeah, that's good. I think we should get into your content DNA concept. So apparently, with this philosophy, you can make people stop scrolling. Tell me about that. How do you make people stop scrolling with your content?
Oh my God, Alex. I think that you begin your morning with scrolling your feed, don't you?
Maybe.
Okay. So how many messages there make you stop scrolling and start reading to what people actually say?
That's a great point. Yeah, I know it leaps out at me, and I'm a somewhat sophisticated consumer of news and information because I write content. I'm a PR guy, but admittedly, I'll fall for the stuff that jumps out at me for whatever reason. Sure.
Yeah, aside from the news, which we all stop scrolling and start reading because it's, you know, we're living in this world. But when you see the message from some company that's sharing their product or ideas or whatever, it's very difficult nowadays to stop scrolling and start reading, whether it's a short post or a long post, for one reason, because they're talking about themselves. They're so narcissistic that they're not sharing anything that is related to you. It's like walking in on to the party and you don't know a guy, and someone comes to you and says that I'm going to revolutionize your life without even saying hi, who are you? Right?
Right.
So the main goal for the companies to make people stop scrolling and start reading is to get every one of their thoughts, of the reader's thoughts, not the company's one. Because when someone is saying exactly what you were thinking about, you stop scrolling and start reading because it's about you and not them. And the whole content strategy and content DNA is aimed to find that unique thoughts that will basically be the basis of your content and, you know, make people act. That's what content is about.
Right. Yeah, actionable. The thing I say, this is similar to what you're talking about, I think, is I tell my clients this all the time when we're trying to reach customers or members or whoever your audience is, we need to always be thinking about one thing, and that is what's in it for me. That's what the person receiving the information has got to feel comfortable with. If there's something in it for them to keep reading, right? They'll do that. I think what you're saying is, you say you've got to kind of put yourself into into their thought process already, right? But I think part of that too is, of course, as you say, people are all always consumed with themselves because that's how we are as humans. And so what you've got to do is kind of find a way to jack into that with your content. So.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when you catch their thoughts at this very moment, you grab their attention. And then what you do with your content, and I mean the whole con like social media messages, email, everything, website content. So it's the whole structure. What you're doing is you're telling them, I know what you're thinking, and you're right, but you're wrong in this little aspect. And you guide them through the process to your product. What companies do nowadays is they're saying, okay, up till today, you were living wrong. And it's like, what? You know, you are wrong. You're living wrong. And the way you're living is wrong. And listen to me because I'm going to revolutionize your life. You know, there's a great saying from the movie Up in the Air. Before you revolutionize your my business, make sure you know my business. You know? So
That's one of my all-time favorite, by the way, that's one of my all-time favorite movies and one of my favorite books. Nice.
Wow.
Well done. Well done. Love that. Love it.
Me too. I mean, Cooney did a great job on that. So,
Oh, absolutely.
what I'm trying to say is that if you want to get into your prospects' minds, and actually, financial background and everything made me play a long game. It taught me the long game. You know, it's not the strategy I'm talking about right now. It's not for cheap products, e-commerce, or something like that. I'm telling that because if you're in cheap product business, then it's absolutely different strategy. Content strategy now is built for high ticket products, large companies, and personal brands. So that's what we're talking about right now. And when if you're in this, if you're in financial business, you have to learn how to play the long game and you have to be patient. And you know, that's where content DNA comes in.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of well, I still use the concept of inbound marketing. HubSpot pioneered that to a large degree. And it's kind of the way that works, if folks are not familiar with inbound, is you are providing something of value to trade basically for your readers or your viewers' attention. For example, I've blogged for my company blog for almost 12 years now, and I basically do a lot of news you can use. I do a lot of tips. I do a lot of things that'll pull people in that will answer that question, what's in it for me to spend time reading Alex's blog? Oh, he's going to show me top five tips on how to pitch a journalist for my next press release. Or he's going to tell me on his podcast what you should absolutely never do when talking to a journalist. Those are the things. I don't charge for them, but I do that to, I think I'm hearing you correctly, Margot, is because I'm trying to create a long-term relationship with the reader who will hopefully, when they need a PR guy or they need a whatever it is I do or my consultation, they'll think of me. Fair enough.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Alex, I can tell you that I read your blog and you're very consistent in your language and in your strategy because you are talking, it's like you know the person you're talking to, okay? And you're talking to them. Your language is not aggressive. Your language is not like trying to make people feel guilty that they didn't know something before they
Right.
started reading that, right? So you have a very kind and very passionate, you know, passionate language, let's say so. But there are companies that need aggressive language.
Yeah.
Now, it's not bad to have the, you know, very calm language in your message, and it's not bad to have aggressive language, but you can't do both all the time because you will lose your audience. Imagine a calm person, you cannot shout at them, but I know people that don't do anything before you shout at them because that's the only language they get. Now, what companies do on a content level is they're trying to balance this aggressive and passive approach, which never works. You cannot create this strong bonding experience with your prospect because if you do both, because they stop trusting you. They understand that you're playing. And the reason why this happens is that there are several reasons. Like, for example, the company had one copywriter and then they hired another copywriter. And they just forgot to mention and explain that there's a certain strategy that they're using, and the new copywriter is trying absolutely new strategy. So I can tell you this and to your listeners, and tell me if I'm wrong, great copywriters rarely stick to their positions because if you're good at writing, sooner or later, you're opening your own business and you're becoming part of other people's businesses because great copywriters, they can wave into many things. And so you cannot just hire one great copywriter and make them stick for 10 years. I'm sorry, you can't. But what you can do is create a content strategy and put everything on the paper so that hiring a new copywriter would be an easy process, like, you know, very easy, very smooth, and even put down the words you're using mostly. So that the new copywriter would, you know, follow the specific strategy. And then the language will not change. But, you know, 99% of companies don't have that nowadays. And that's where I'm going to change, basically.
Very good. Yeah, I agree. And there's the whole thing about tone of voice and about your writing style and all that, and that's why it's beneficial. I've gotten pulled in over the past year, Margot. Mostly, I've been a writer my whole career, but I've not focused as much on copywriting until this past year when COVID changed my PR consulting a little bit. And there's a couple of things I've learned from that is there's certain writing I'm just not going to be good at. I'm a good, what I like to think of as a good utility player. You could put me in a situation, I can write just about anything you give me the opportunity, but there's going to be some things I'm better at than others. And also, of course, I've had some marketing firms that hire me say, you're too expensive, but you know, that's too bad. I've been doing this for 27 years. I'm not going to work for 10 bucks an hour. So speaking of new, hiring copywriters, I'd love to get into this. What should you prepare if you're a company, or a solopreneur, whoever you may be, listener? What should listeners prepare before hiring a copywriter?
Well, it's a as I call it, it's a content package or a content DNA package. That includes you and your business, and the description will cover that, and people will understand how to do this. The second is your customer avatar, and not the, you know, list of those features like how old are they and do they own a house or not, or something like that, that you can find in Google, but I will list the specific features that you need to have for your customer avatar. And the third is your content structure. Structure of your message, what you write, how do you greet your prospects and clients? How do you say goodbye to them? What words do you use in the middle, and list that everything very, very carefully once. It's a one-time job, really. Right. Everyone can do that over a weekend and save hours and hours on explaining to copywriters what they should do. And once you have this content DNA in place, I swear, because my clients did that multiple times, you can go on Upwork and you can definitely hire a copywriter for $15 an hour and they will deliver a great copy just because you have everything placed on the paper and it's exactly what your prospects need. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's the thing. You've got everything set. There's no questions. They can be more efficient. Most copywriters work by the hour. You want them to be as efficient as possible, not hunting things down, right? Like, oh my gosh, where's your policy paper on this? Where's your product list? Where's your this? Where's your that? So you put this all together. So I, you know what? I haven't called it a customer avatar before. That just shows you how rusty I may be at being strictly into content writing. But are there particular aspects of the customer avatar that we should have in place, or is that something you'll get into if we hire you? Because I don't want you to give away your stuff. Okay.
Absolutely. I'm more than happy to share all the information for free. The only thing that people pay me for is when I do that by myself. That's it. Information is free for me. So let's go. So the customer avatar, as I see it, it's there. You don't need to find it. You need to define it, because we all attract like-minded people. And as much as we want, if it's a person-based business, I mean, if you are the face of your business, want it or not, your customer avatar is already there, and they are like you. In some aspects, I mean, they don't have the same hair color or maybe the same, you know, vision in some things, but there are some features that they have common with you, because that's what makes us, you know, like people when we see something similar. So we start creating customer avatar with you. So you need to define how you see the universe. Is the universe a friendly place for you or a hostile place? Are you aggressive or are you building? You know, because they're creative, entrepreneurial type who want to change the world, change the things. And then there are business people who are more aggressive, like coaches and, you know, those sports people who are, you know, they're always fighting with someone, because in sports you cannot win unless you, you know, defeat your competitor. So that's what they basically do. But the strategy is totally different. So you're going to attract like-minded people. This is the first question. You cannot attract entrepreneurial style if you're always grind and do this. And no, you're going to attract business people who are building, you know, and they're fighting every single day. So this is the first question you need to answer for yourself. Then you need to, when you're talking about your customer avatar, you need to define first your anti-avatar. Again, it's not about them, it's about you first. Anti-avatar is the person who you will never, ever do business with, even if they pay you twice as much as you're earning right now. You're sitting and putting down all the qualities of the people or businesses, it depends on B2B or B2C. So you're putting down all the qualities of the person you never want to work with. why that happens, that actually came to me from this heroes, superheroes and their enemies and all the stuff, you know, because every time there's lots of things you can find in comic books. So every time when we find a hero in comic book, their enemy is always defining some fears or some, you know, qualities that is connected somehow to the hero. It's not like it's totally different. And the same goes with customer avatar. Once you define who you do not want to work with, which is much easier, you know, I know,
yeah,
you know, right? So you can basically mirror that. And your customer avatar starts shaping. So if you don't want to work with stubborn people, you want to work with people who take action. If you don't like to work with, you know, limited, this just in the box people, then you need the out of, you know, out of box minded people, right? So once again, customer avatar is there. Now, did you find it actually entertaining in your mind while I think that something was going on in your mind as I was talking? Tell me about it.
Well, just it's interesting to think about the comic book metaphor because, yeah, I mean, and we all have our origin story for our superhero. Well, there's an origin story for the villains, as you're discussing. And I found it amusing because I started thinking about clients who I do not want to work with, or the types of clients I don't want to work with as villains, you know, as comic book villains. Don't get me wrong. They're perfectly decent people in real life. But I found that to be I thought that was a colorful and fun way to think about it. Very creative.
Yeah, we need to find analogies in our lives because otherwise we don't get it fully. So once again, comic books is something that all of my clients have read while kids, including me. Mm-hmm. You see? So this is one of my features that I use when talking to my clients, and everybody gets it. You know, so you need to find and define your customer avatar based on these features. And once you've done it, you have to list three states of your customer avatar, which I define as inner minimum, inner breakdown, and inner maximum. Mm-hmm. Now, we all think that we are, you know, getting out the best for our clients. And the more we offer, the more they will, you know, have to agree to us, right? The mm-hmm. more they will choose us over our competitors. So anyway, the thing is, our minds are limited, and we cannot accept the realistic change unless it's realistic for our mind. Okay, so okay. What we do is when. Imagine a person who is making 40K a year, and you're coming to them and you're saying, next year, you're going to make $5 million. Well, you know what? Yeah. If you go to a person who's made $1 million and you tell them $5 million next year, they will go, okay, fine, I made $1 million. But 40K, they did not pass the barrier even of 200K, for example, or something. Right. So that promise will be unrealistic to them. And that is what financial business is all about, by the way, about unrealistic promises. When you just invest with us and you will, you know, retire with all that house and all that. And in the at the same time, the minds of the prospects or whoever is going to invest in their potential investors, it's not ready for even when it's too, you know, far away from nowadays, but it's not ready for that state. So you need to capture their inner minimum where they are now and define it clearly. Then you need to turn their inner minimum into inner breakdown, which means that what you have now is good, but it's not enough. And you are, you know, actually, you can get more. So basically, you're telling them that their inner minimum, their comfort zone is, you know, not that comforting anymore. And then you multiply their inner current state by 5 and tell them you're going to get 5 times better than you are right now. 5 is tops. What our minds, it's tested over years, 5 times is tops what they can actually take.
Before the thought process kicks in of them thinking you're full of crap, basically. If you say, like you said earlier, you know, yeah, I make 40K a year and I'm going to skip 6 figures and go right to 7 figures. That's what you're telling me. That's crap. That's what they're going to think. So you're mm-hmm. saying there are aspirational targets you can set with your content aimed at your audience, but make sure those aspirational guideposts are not outrageous.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need to be careful with that because it's always better to draw a picture, to make them draw a picture in their heads than draw a picture by yourself and go into numbers and all this stuff. Like, for example, I don't know. I know many people who are not inspired by all this, you know, fancy cars and houses and all the stuff because they don't see themselves there at all. I mean, they can look at it. Yeah, it's nice. They will like the post on Instagram, but they will not take action. And we can see that every single day happening. So you cannot do that in financial sphere. You cannot do that in B2B business because you only have one shot. And if you will keep bombing your audience with all those messages, unrealistic messages, you will lose your business to your competitors. And that's exactly what I was talking about from the very beginning. I mean, this is not for a commerce business. It's for for a serious business, you know?
Right. It's not for inherently transactional business is what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're just selling a widget of some sort, that's great. But that's not really what we're talking about here because the product, if you like the product, you'll come back. It's not necessarily the relationship, although that's nice too. So I think I hear what you're saying. The e-commerce, this is not necessarily the track you'd put on it. It's more for services. It's more for things that require a long-term relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah, I tried to apply this method to e-commerce. It didn't work. So
didn't work.
Yeah, because e-commerce is totally a different business. I've never been to an e-commerce business. I know nothing about it. And I just might guess that it has a lot to do with this, you know, price delivery policy and all this stuff and you know, marketing and ads. So it's not for that. Anyone owning an e-commerce store right now, you can basically just take some tips from it, but it's not going to work fully.
Well, I think the tip they can draw from it, even if you're an e-commerce professional or owner of that kind of business, is you still owe it to yourself to understand your customer as much as possible. You owe it to yourself to you know, go ahead and make that comic book comparison with them, and just see, because you know you're gonna know who your number one customers are. Hey, Margo, in the time we have left, we got to wrap soon here. Gosh, this is fascinating. But what other points did you want to get across real quick as we head across the finish line here?
Yeah, sure. Never outsource your copywriting until you've done your content strategy. I think that this is the most important thing that every person should hear. You as an entrepreneur, you as an owner of the company, you should actually take control of your content because this is the most important thing. Someone who's working, you know, an hourly job should not decide the fate of your business. And you need to take this one day off or 2 days off your busy work and actually draft that content strategy, that content DNA or anything else, call it as you want. But this is the most important thing you will do for years ahead for your business. So don't outsource this process. Make this and then outsource the content writing itself.
Very good. Very good. Margo White, how do we get a hold of you if they want to consult with you or hire you or connect?
Oh, it's LinkedIn, Margo White, copywriting. On Instagram, I'm Mean Marketer, and I hope my website will be out by then. It's writewithwhite.com.
Yeah, I checked it out. You're still under construction, but you know, that's just the hazard we all fall into here, isn't it? I mean, we're so busy working for our clients and customers, we can't get our own stuff where we want it just yet, right?
Tell me about it.
Oh man. No, I think that's great, Margot. I'll put links in the show notes so everybody can track you down. I've learned a lot. I appreciate it. And thanks so much for joining us here on PR After Hours.
Oh, thank you, Alex. Bye.
Oh, you know what that means? Looks like it's last call here at your virtual lounge for PR news, views, and interviews.
We'll keep it short and sweet. Just remind you, if you like the show, there's many ways you can help us keep it going, not the least among which is to rate this podcast. Simply go to the show notes at prafterhours.com or wherever you're getting this podcast and click on the link. RateThisPodcast.com/after, and it will take you to Apple Podcasts and a couple other places very easily. One click, you write your review, it's done. Can't tell you enough how important it is to get ratings on those sites so that we can build our audience and keep bringing you the kind of information you need every week for your business. Also, don't forget, if you want to sponsor the show, give us a tip in the virtual tip jar or ask a question, there are links in the show notes. Well, I think it's time that I cleaned up and closed up for this edition of PR After Hours here on Anchor FM.